All right, we are recording, and you are currently looking at a at one of our Wing House girls from the tailgate last year. We're going to skip the bumper because all the people on the bumper that we used to use are no longer on the team. We're going to show you some super cutting-edge technology here in a second. I'm going to take my life in my hands, turning it on. Let me get my other camera to full screen and see how that works. What you have before you is, I think, a first for us. I think we tried it once before. It didn't work out too well. You see on the top here, because I always like to be on top, he said, with tongue firmly in cheek, Old School, coming live from Studio 76. And then below me, Mr. Kurt Creel, coming from his studio, which is now in Hillsboro. Is it Hillsboro? Pasco? Where the hell are you?
I'm in Pinellas.
Not Orange.
No, not Orange. No longer Orange. I'm in Pinellas, and I'm the bottom.
And you are the bottom. Welcome to What the Buck. We are here live after the draft. This is the time of year when everyone is excited. It's almost like Christmas Eve for Bucks fans, though I guess it'd probably be more aptly described as Christmas Day because we've already opened up the presents. But all of the bitterness and anger and frustration of the year have worn away. We're shiny. We have a new chance at life. We've got new groceries in the cupboards, not only from the draft, but also from those undrafted free agents that we went up and signed a bunch of. It was almost like getting a bunch of, you know, down on their luck folks in that supermarket sweep game that used to be on television and collecting everything they can from the store. So tonight's show will be covering a number of topics. The two primary areas of focus will be the draft, and the draft meaning physically, because Kurt is one of the lucky fans, and luck really had nothing to do with it. Kurt planned to go there, so he flew up. Attended the draft in Chicago, and I want to get a report right from his mouth as to how things went, how the Bucks represented. We had a number of Bucks fans over there. Many of you saw some very recognizable Bucks fans like Big Nasty and Major Buck who were right there on the floor repping for our squad, which was great. We got a fancy guru in the chat room, Trat WTP. I like it. Walk the Plank is over there, which is good, and he had made a comment, and I want to address a couple of these things right at the beginning of the show. But before I address the things we've screwed up, I want to say happy one-year anniversary to Patches, our lone writer in addition to myself. I can't really clap without hitting my microphone. I don't have any sound effects. You know, these are all things that Kurt probably loses sleep over because he's actually a legitimate broadcaster on a real radio program from time to time. But Patches has been with us 1 year. He's written 51 articles, done a great job for us. His writing has come a long way. And he just continues to get better and bust his ass. We had content going up during the draft while I was slaving away at our golf tournament, which I'll give you a brief update on. While Kurt was up in Chicago, we had articles getting posted from Patches, which was just awesome because I had totally forgotten about football and what the hell it meant. So with that in mind, if you would like to assist us with content, hit us up, oldschool@whatthebuck.net, and we would love to have you participate. We're going to be trying to make some big changes here in year 10. In year 10 of What the Buck, we're going to try and make some changes to help hopefully propel us for the next decade because for some reason we plan on keep doing this. So anyway, a couple of housekeeping things as we get things kicked off. A big shout out to some of the other podcasters that have really kind of stepped up the game in the podcast world. A couple of these guys are not just podcasters. When I say just podcasters, most of you guys understand that I don't really mean just. Now, Drew Hamilton says his volume's low. If you're in the chat room and can give us feedback on the levels, let me know. I can adjust those. We'll crank those up a bit for you right now. That should be much better for you guys out there in the Ustream land, and we'll see how Kurt sound. And then when Mark Cook calls later, it'll probably blow your eardrums out. But that should be much better for you, Drew. At any rate, for our podcast universe, you know that we're big fans of Bucks Brief and what Feesh does over there. Justin Pawlowski, the fair and just commissioner of WDAE fame, as well as the fan fame, et cetera, legit broadcaster in his own right, got his Commission Online podcast going, and it is absolutely phenomenal. I actually tweeted tonight about it. I listened to his last episode. Did a phenomenal job. He's one of the only guys who knew what the hell an Ali Marpet was before the draft, and it made me go out there and take a look. And I'll tell you what, my man was all over that one. It was very, very solid. Now, I don't necessarily agree with some of his conspiracy theory. I feel bad. Go Bucks doesn't have any audio. Usually if you do a refresh, you'll be fine over there, guys, in the Ustream. But we will be posting the podcast immediately after the show. He has some conspiracy theories about Jameis Winston that we'll talk about. But in general, what I'm bringing out here is you've got some great content that's not generated by the Bucks and not dictated by the Bucks. I'm a season ticket holder. I love the Bucks, but damn them for controlling what we say about the team. And whether you consider yourself mainstream media or quote-unquote fringe media, as Scott Reynolds labels some of us, Bucks Brief, Commission Online, Pewter Report, Joe Bucks Fan, and Bucks Nation with Sandra, I think I'll do a great job. So if you're not following, reading, paying attention to those guys, and you're a Bucks fan, you really should do so. With the proliferation of smartphone apps allowing you to do this stuff easily, I would go subscribe to this podcast right away. So with regards to the other housekeeping, you may have noticed that What the Buck is not just about football. I got some shit on our Facebook page the other day, Kurt, because I posted some things about the Trunk Slammers Invitational on the Facebook page, and some dude came on and said, this is why I don't come to this Facebook page, because this has nothing to do with the Bucks. Okay. So if
I haven't been paying attention.
If I get past the lunacy of picking on a charity event for pediatric cancer, which is really hard for me to get past, by the way. I mean, that one's tough for me to leap past. I also have to get past the fact that anyone who's been with us for any of our previous 9 years knows we've never been only about football. We have the best tailgate in Tampa, Hall of Fame tailgate. We get together on a regular basis to do charitable work. That spawned an entire 501c3 charitable foundation, What the Buck Really Matters. We threw our first golf tournament on the 1st during the draft. Not saying that was the best plan from a strategic perspective. We've learned many things. But what I can tell you is we raised over $20,000 for pediatric cancer. And that's pretty goddamn amazing. So for everyone who participated in that, everyone who donated, everyone who helped in any way, shape, or form, thank you. We also signed up to do this for at least 5 more years, which means, if you can do some basic math, by the time that 5 years is done, we should have raised at least $100,000 for pediatric cancer research. And that's phenomenal for a bunch of guys who like to get around, and girls, drink a bunch of Fireball, watch the Bucks, talk shit, and stagger home mildly inebriated. So that's what we talk about by transcending just the tailgate, transcending the game. So we hope when you come to our show, when you come to our tailgates, you realize, wow, we have a lot of fun with the game, and we certainly love football. And I like to think we know a little bit more about football than some of the others. There's more to us than just that. Tonight, as I mentioned, not only are we joined by the lovely and the talented Kurt Creel, but we also have Mark Cook dialing in at 9:30. Now, here's an interesting little piece here about the dialing in of Mark Cook. There's a non-zero chance that dial-in will fail completely, and we'll have to figure it out. So that's the essence of live shows. A lot of these folks do podcasts, record them, produce them, cut them up, put in bumpers, all that sort of stuff. We are either incompetent or too lazy to do that, and potentially both. I just don't know. So I'm going to pass it over to Kurt, and I'm going to give him a little bit of an intro, and then I'm going to let him have a full screen, which is going to be even better because he's way more handsome than I am. You will notice that I'm rocking my Lightning jersey tonight. It is, in fact, an old school 76 jersey, as you may have seen on Facebook before. The Lightning are up 1-0, and by God, we're going to pull for them. So we're being the Thunder while we're doing this. Now, as I mentioned, Kurt did make the trip up to Chicago. Kurt and I traveled to Chicago last year during the season as well, so he and I have done the Chicago thing, but he had a much better-looking accompaniment this time, the lovely Ms. Creel. And tell me all about the draft, and help these fans out here understand what it was like to be in Chicago to experience this once-a-season opportunity.
Well, you know, this is the first year they did it this way. Obviously, I'm sure most everyone saw it on TV and saw the difference because they were pimping the hell out of it up there. But essentially, the theater arrangement made it so that the general Joe fan wasn't able to get into the actual draft this year. It cut down their sellable seats by about 3,000. So they came up with this idea, and I'm sure it's been in the works for a while. This probably wasn't the catalyst for it. It was probably already in the works to have Draft Town outside of the theater, making it more of a fan experience. If you've ever been to the NFL experience at any of the other NFL events, like when the Super Bowl was here in Tampa or any of those things, that's pretty much exactly what it was times 10. They had all the Super Bowl rings. They had a fake stage where you could go up, take your team's jersey, get your picture taken with the backdrop behind the podium. They had NFL Network's Live was there. They had an ESPN stage there. They had, of course, a merchandise trailer. They had a Wilson booth.
Wait, you mean you could buy tchotchkes and shit from the NFL?
You could actually buy
No
NFL.
Way!
Chicago branded, you know, Chi-Town is on the clock, or NFL Draft. So that was, of course they're going to sell stuff. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
They had a stage with a band. They had a beer garden. And then they had a row, and each team had their own tent. Different levels of activity happening in those tents. when I first got there on Thursday, lots of activity, lots of people kind of hanging out at their own tent. Chicago had a list of players, so they had players signing autographs all weekend. You could see what times everybody was coming. Some teams had cheerleaders there, the Colts, the Dolphins, the Falcons. Some teams had their mascots there, the Rams, again, the Falcons. The Bucks had Kurt and his bag of beads that he brought from home.
Well, they compensated you for doing that, right?
Excuse me?
They compensated you for doing that, right?
Your and my definition of compensated must be two totally different things.
Well, at least you gave him a bill for the beads, I hope.
Yeah, I should have done that if I would have thought about it. Of course, there's a lot of activity around our booth on the first night, so it didn't really matter. Everybody wanted to talk to anybody wearing Bucks gear. Every person with a blog, with a digital recorder, with a camera. I did a couple of interviews early on Thursday with Keith, with Big Nasty. We talked to NBC Sports. We did a local CBS affiliate. We did a couple of things because, of course, I'm wearing my Winston jersey, and Keith is being Keith, loud and, of course, you know, drawing attention to us. So Thursday, the Bucks not representing in the booth wasn't that big of a deal. By the time our pick rolled around and we were on the clock and it started rolling, it was asses to elbows. Couldn't get in the tent. Couldn't get out of the tent. it was packed. And, of course, the reaction was much like it was at Raymond James. Not much like, exactly like it was at Raymond James. It just went crazy. After that, Friday and Saturday, the Bucks not being there representing themselves was much more apparent because people were not paying attention that much to the actual physical draft, and they were paying attention more to the other activities that were going on, the player signings and, you know, who's giving out what and that kind of thing. So that's where it kind of got to me that we didn't really have any representation there. And what else do you want to know?
No, I think that's probably it. It's interesting. You know, Kurt and I talked a little bit about this. This is one of those things where you're the first team to pick. Going to the draft is kind of a dream. I know we had Ramona and a couple of other folks that were up there. That was great. You guys had some terrific pictures. I think it was probably great. You're a terrific fan. So as a fan, it's a bucket list item. Yes. Will you go again?
They owe me a trip, so I will take that trip when they give it to me, absolutely, for my services. One more thing. So, excuse me. The decorations there were – there was a standard set of decorations, and then there was, like, some extra stuff. Where our extra stuff came from, I have no idea. The pre-order stuff was essentially back wall banners of your team logo and a marquee player. Okay.
Right.
And then they had a locker set up, locked with, you know, glass front locked with a second marquee player. Okay. So our marquee player in the back was Mike Evans. And then our locker player was Vincent Jackson. There's a jersey and some cleats and some gloves and a towel and, you know, that kind of thing in there. Then there was some random stuff scattered about. There was some finger football, playing fields that were 3M taped to the table. There was a wooden sign. There was a clock. Those things were gone when I got back there on Friday. So someone absconded with all of our stuff. So not only did we look bad, but we were no longer decorated even as sparsely as that was.
Now, was that more the norm or the exception? I know you said the Atlanta Falcons were there in full force.
Yeah, they had that mascot and cheerleaders. I would say it was about 50-50. The Cardinals had nobody and nothing. The Carolina booth, which I thought was hilarious, I took so many pictures. That Carolina booth sat empty for 3 days. I don't know if anybody ever even went in there. The New Orleans booth had a bunch of New Orleans fans. The Falcons fans didn't really have the Falcon booth didn't have any Falcons fans, but a lot of people stopped there because of the activity.
Sure.
Same thing with the 49ers. They really didn't have any fans there, but a lot of people stopped there because they were giving out towels, rally towels. You know, it said 2015 draft 49ers and stuff. I mean, it was some
thought. They're picking up free shit, which is good.
Right. Right. They were picking up free stuff. And what I was most surprised about, and again, this is in Grant Park. If you've ever been to Chicago, Grant Park is huge. The fountain from the beginning of Married with Children is part of this park. I mean, it's a massive park, and the NFL has it totally locked down. It's a totally free event, though, but it's all enclosed. And I would say it was about 50-50. I mean, the Colts had cheerleaders there, so they had some activity at their booth. The Dolphins had quite a bit of activity. The entire NFC East was very well represented. The Philly booth, you could never get in. The Dallas booth, you could never get in. The Bills didn't really have anything. So, yeah, I mean, I would say about 50-50.
It's probably what you would expect based on the popularity of the teams nationally. With the exception of any geographic simplicity that the NFC East teams recognize, right?
Right, right. I mean, obviously the Chicago booth was the hit of the thing, and,
sure.
and they had a TV crew stationed there the entire time, local, you know. So
Captain Reno just said you would have had more popularity in the Bucks booth if you took the Wing House girls with you, and I really think that's irrefutable.
I would have taken any of them that still work there, certainly.
Anyone who's getting commercials, there are various and sundry ad blocks that can overcome that. Most of the folks in the chat room know what they are. I don't because I'm not watching the show, but I think that there's Mozilla add-ins, et cetera. My guess, so some of the folks are talking about video delay and you podcast people are like, what the video, huh? Well, we do this video live as well via Ustream, and my guess is that Ustream is starting to say, hey, screw you guys who are getting this free broadcasting stuff. So we'll see what happens. Kurt is a technologist like myself, and I think as we get two brains together, they should exceed the half a brain that I usually had involved in this. And we'll be able to find a solution, whether it's Ustream or something else. We do really want to up the ante this year. We've been doing the same kind of thing. We've been pushing the envelope for about a decade. But now, you know, people have kind of caught up a little bit. Now people are using this Periscope bullshit, which is all iOS specific. But we've talked a couple of years now about doing some more whiteboard stuff. I tried to do it with our software tools. It doesn't work particularly well. There are a number of studios we may be able to get some time in here locally that might up the game a little bit. You guys know us. We like nothing more than pissing off the people who do this for a real living, apparently. So we're going to continue to make our production even more interesting and drag people in. So we also have some interviews lined up from the players. Since the Shiano regime is gone, it looks like we're going to have access to players again. And that's always been fun. So with a transition from draft town to draft, Kurt, as a representative Bucks fan, the Bucks come away with a guy who you, I believe, were the first person I ever saw to rep a Jameis Winston jersey, a jersey that might have been a Jameis Winston jersey had it not been for the proliferation of number 5 jerseys that Bucks fans have bought over the last 7 years that they could easily retrofit to Jameis Winston. No, I'm sorry. It's because he wore that number in high school. He's now number 3. How do you feel about that? And are you as tickled by the money grab by giving him Matt Bryant's old number?
The money grab? No, that's fine with me. I understand why 5 was not...
Cha-ching!
Was not the best option in his or possibly the franchise's eyes to do that. I understand that, you know, he wants to make a number his own.
I hold you responsible. You showing people how easy it was to create your own Jameis Winston jersey, and they went, oh, shit. People aren't going to buy these new jerseys.
It cost me $12 to put a new nameplate on that.
Yeah,
there's
no way they're going to let that stand, brother. You are responsible. You better own that one.
I'll take it. I'll take it, but I don't think – I mean, yeah, the money grab is maybe not. I mean, whatever. He wore 8, and he wore 3. I mean, he wore 8 in high school. He wore 3 in Pop Warner, and he's back to 3. He's back to the beginning. But there really was a buzz. And, you know, at Drafttown, as we're doing these interviews, the whole dynamic had changed. No one was asking – No one out of the 10 or 12 that we did there on Thursday asked about the off-field stuff. No one said. It was more the Winston versus Mariota debate is what they really wanted to know. They didn't ask any questions about, aren't you concerned about, you know, the off-field issues? That was not part of the draft on site there, at least as far as the media was concerned that we're talking to Bucks fan.
Oh, interesting. And we'll talk about that, but Montreal just scored to even the game in Tampa, 1-1 with 9:57 left in the third. There was a scrum in the crease. Bishop deflected a number of shots, and then Montreal shoved it in. So it's now 1-1 in Amalie Arena. Now, off the field stuff. Let's get into the draft. We get Jameis Winston. We get our franchise quarterback. If you haven't listened to Commission Online's recent podcast, you talk about this is a guy that this franchise was enamored with for quite some time. Not like towards the end of last year, not to the beginning of last year. Last season, I mean, we're talking a long time back, and Justin goes into sort of a proposed conspiracy theory that I encourage you to go listen to on his podcast. I think it's a little bit too much, but that's just me. I'm not a conspiracy theory guy, except for with the Jameis Winston jersey and Kurt. but you have a chance to get the guy you want. They go up and grab their franchise quarterback. Off the field stuff aside, and that will never be allowed to be aside, by the way, you got the best thrower of the football in the draft. Drew Hamilton in the chat room, no, we did not trade down for an offensive lineman. Though we did do some moving around, and what's funny is if you look at this lineup last week, because we actually did have a podcast last week, glory be, we talked about positions of need. We had quarterback, offensive line, said tackle, then guard slash center swing. Then I wanted D-line, then I wanted linebacker, and the rest was just like meat on the bones. If you can find some secondary help, great. My belief is that the Lovie regime believes they can build these guys. So when you look at what we got with Jameis Winston at number one, Donovan Smith, big tackle out of Penn State, coming in the second round, a trade back up to grab Ali Marpet out of mighty Hobart. Then they go grab a linebacker, Quan Alexander, who definitely, I think we got a steal on that one, a little bit of motion to grab that guy as well. And if you listen to Jason Light, he's going to compete for starting reps on the team. We look at the linebacking crew, it got better instantly. Danny Lansana, who we're hoping to have on the show, is one of those guys who can play every single linebacker position, which gives you, just like when you had a guy like Jeremy Zuda, I think people envision a guy like Ali Marpet on the offensive line, and in his interviews at the Senior Bowl, he actually feels he can play every position across the line. He's played left tackle. He's played right tackle. The only position he hadn't played at that point is center, and he feels like he lines up well for that. And Justin also believes that, if you listen to his podcast, and Justin knows offensive line pretty well. Quan Alexander gives us more of that speed, the kind of linebackers that this team wants, that Leslie Frazier wants and Lovie wants and that Hardy Nickerson wants in that regime. Then they did a very Bucks thing here at the end, and they doubled up again, and they went wide receiver, wide receiver. Now, I have a friend who's a huge Nebraska booster, Kurt. He's a longtime Nebraska guy, Nebraska alum, et cetera. So I see Kenny Bell come across. I text him, hey, what's the scoop on Kenny Bell? He tells me all the information about Kenny Bell, loves the kid. He's, like, good at everything, not great at anything, all hustle, is going to make every play he can make on the field. And, by the way, worked his way through school, fighting his electrical bills and everything that were off, got a job, and he sent me the link that I tweeted out, and that's now a story about work ethic. So when you think about the kind of integrity they're looking for, that's really kind of what they're looking for, right? Now, Kalen Clay has essentially been given a job, if you listen to Jason Light. The return duties are his to lose. I would normally bristle at this. But our return capabilities have been so goddamn bad. At this point, I'd rather just have Tim Brown back there and fair catch. So I don't really give a shit if they gave him the job. The kid's fast. He did a good job in college, but so did a lot of guys who came to the pros, got busted in the chops, and then never wanted to catch a ball again. So we'll see if that works out. And then at the end, again, I'm giving Justin a lot of love this podcast because I really did go back and listen to some of his podcasts. They're very good. He was always good on mainstream air as well. But when Joey Iosefa was picked, I kind of went with a meh on Twitter because I don't think we need running backs. I actually like our running back core. And he said, hey, listen, before you do that, go look at some tape. And if you haven't gone and looked at the tape on Joey Iosefa, do that. Kurt, have you had a chance to go out there and look at YouTube for him?
No, I did not. But correct me if I'm wrong here. Was he somebody who could also be plugged in at fullback too?
Yep.
That pick was made.
Yep, he's a big, thick kid, strong, runs low, good pad level. You don't have highlights of running backs block, right? But he's a transitional guy. I think he gives us some depth. I think Javorski Lane coming back in gives us some health as well. Javorski has a great story, actually. Scott Reynolds had on his Fab Five about Javorski going back and getting some sort of reading demons taken care of in the offseason and helping kids with it as well. So when you look at what they've done here, you've got some pretty good beef there at that fullback position that we haven't had in the past. I know a lot of you FSU guys were Lonnie Pryor guys, but he just didn't seem to work out very well. And that started all the way back in training camp. So the no pickup of Doug Martin's option from the running back core would normally concern people, but I don't know that it does. Doug Martin with the injuries, I'm a Doug Martin guy. I like Doug Martin. A lot of people have soured on Doug. But when you look at the talent that's on this core, from Doug Martin to Michael James, Bobby Rainey, and then, you know, Charles Sims, who the front office is definitely high on, that's a lot of talent. It's hard for me to understand. Now, admittedly, I have pewter-colored glasses on, but it's hard for me to understand why people think this is a position of weakness for us. I think you can't have too many bodies in the backfield.
Don't forget Dominic Brown, you know.
Oh, yeah. How did I forget Dominic Brown? No, that's a good point. Now, Calico Jack in the chat room brings up a good point about Cutter liking big backs. He likes big backs, and he cannot lie. And we got Jason Snelling and Michael Turner as examples. And I think we have just a tremendous amount of flexibility back there. I don't know what the hell Mike James did. But he hasn't been able to sniff the field since he shattered his ankle. And he almost shattered his ankle running for too many yards. Because he was doing really well when that happened. So hopefully we'll get a chance to see him come back and be healthy. Warning for our viewers out there in the chat room, we are getting very, very close to the time where Mark Cook is supposed to dial in, and we have no idea what's going to happen. I think what's going to happen is Kurt's going to go on hold, and we'll switch over to Mark Cook, and Kurt will be in the chat room with you guys. Who knows? Maybe we can do two of these things. I just don't know. It could be a crazy Mark Cook, Kurt Creel, Derek three-way. Did he say that out loud? Oh, there's a reason we're not rated. Everyone in the chat room is talking about Kenny Bell's block where he absolutely and flat out destroys a guy a la Hines Ward, and everyone's like, oh, I don't know if that would be a penalty. No, it would be a penalty. Go ahead and put that one of these. Rest easy. That would have been a penalty. But as a coach, I'm all right with that one because that son of a bitch ain't chasing no one down after he got his clock cleaned. The other thing about Kenny Bell, and you guys said this about Iosefa as well, Kenny Bell is a special teams guy. He's going to go out there and run as many reps as you can do. So
I think Levy is setting himself up. He doesn't want to be caught short anywhere. And some of these, I don't like to call them utility players, but some of these multi-talented, multi-position experienced players, they go a long way. I mean, you know, you can't have too many of those guys, I don't think. And I think Lovey's setting himself up pretty good with some of these. So at least some of the later picks like that. You kind of get a two for one out of it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny because you guys know I always have, I've been drawn to the big men. I like the fat guys who play on the line. They're important. No one likes to look at them. No one likes to talk about them. But goddamn it, if they're not doing their job, we all know about it and the team falls apart. So I went and I read a bunch of, no, Bell cannot play defensive end, Ed. That's a great question, though. And in fact, Jason was asked that question about that. And walk the planks right, Lance Sanders is another one of those guys, right? I mean, while he came into some prominence last year due to injury, he is a guy who has no problem playing special teams and will play anywhere you need, which is a terrific point.
I know your favorite part of the draft.
What was that?
No tight end.
You know what's funny is, and this is where I fall into the homerism that many FSU people fall into, though not the Ginger Badass, and I really stand by him in defending himself. While Mark Cook is probably one of the biggest FSU fans I know, I do know that his journalistic integrity does not allow him to be a homer on this stuff. So if any of you are thinking about that, if you care about my opinion, which you probably don't if you don't care about his, I don't think that's what it was. That said, I got to tell you, your tight end I was in love with. I was in love with him when we played in school. I like tight ends that don't wear gloves. He's a throwback guy. I'm pissed that the Bills got him.
He blocks.
He blocks. He does everything. Now, he's a little small, I think, to block at the next level. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, that was one of those ones I was sitting at a bar watching that day, and I was like, oh, come on, please go get my boy O'Leary. You got to get him.
The Bills took three of those players.
I know.
The Bills took three of them.
It's amazing. But the draft is kind of like Christmas, and we got our presents. We got them all unwrapped. And then we get to go and try and throw them in there and see what training camp looks like. And it's interesting because, you know, when I watched some of the film on Smith and Marpet, I don't know a very fundamental thing, and maybe you guys will. I mean, Calico Jack in the chat room, you guys are very bright watchers of the game. I don't know what the hell blocking scheme we're going to use, and I'm going to ask Mark Cook that when he does call in. Last year, we had the ill-fated attempt to move to zone. We did that for 15 games. 15 of the games we did that in, we sucked balls at it. One game, we ran power man. Insert running back here ran for 140 yards, and our offense looked like it was decent. Now, does that mean I think that if we ran Power Man all year, we would have won 16 games? No. Would we have gotten Jameis Winston? Probably not. I think we win at least one more game, and we're looking at Leonard Williams wearing a Buccaneer jersey, because I don't think the Bucs had Marcus Mariota any higher than probably 4 or 5. But that's just my guess. I have no I'm not credentialed. I am a member of the fringe media, so I don't know what they really think. Ed Hines wants to know, is Luke Stocker on the bubble? Hell no! Luke Stocker's not on the bubble. Luke Stocker's the best tight end all around we have on this team, guys. Everyone needs to understand, Luke Stocker's only deficiency is he's made of goddamn tissue paper. That is his only problem, because when he is on the field, he fucking kills people in blocking. He's got good hands. He runs decent routes. He is a next generation and mildly better, and this is with all due respect, because I love John Gilmore as a human being, and he's a big supporter of the TSI, but he's that kind of guy. He's a lunch pail guy. He's going to go out there. He's going to crush people he gets a chance to crush. He's going to make the tackle next to him look like less of a blocker, and then if you throw the ball at him, he's going to catch it.
And then by game three, you've got to put the backup in.
God damn it. Yes, because he's Mr. Glass from Unbreakable. I know. It hurts my feelings, but it is, in fact, very, very true. So not being on the field makes you irrelevant. I know. It's a good point. You can't make the club in the tub. There's a bunch of other colloquialisms here that apply. I don't know why the guys curse that way. Hell, Jermaine Phillips. Look at Jermaine Phillips. This is a guy who is going to be the heir apparent to John Lynch. And if he wasn't made of glass, he could have done that. The guy was actually really coming into his own. But hopefully he stays healthy. The reality of the situation is, if this team is not playing with ASJ in, here comes Mark Cook. Let's see what happens. Answering this call, or we can do a group call. Can we do that? Hello, uh-oh. Mr. Cook.
What's up?
Holy cow, we've got you in here. Let me see what's going on. We're doing some new technology stuff with you live, and it's working, kind of.
Really? Hopefully you don't have a live camera you snuck in my house, because you don't want to see me right now.
Well, rest assured, I rarely want to see you. So it is all good. You may be charged for calling it. That's fine. I don't care about that. All right. So we do need to get you set up, though, Mr. Cook, with some kind of technology beyond whatever rotary phone you have in your house in Plant City, because I would absolutely love to have you on camera when you're too lazy to drive to my house.
Well, yeah, about that. You're the only person that would like to have me on camera. My wife doesn't even want me on camera. No one else wants to see me on camera but you, which is kind of weird. But anyway.
Well, yeah, I can believe it, though. So we have with us the ginger badass, Mark Cook from Pewter Report. We have Kurt Creel still. This is the kind of shit we do, guys. So, Mark, you've got to be ecstatic. Not only is this a guy from a school that you're a supporter of, but I know that has nothing to do with your affinity for him as a thrower of the football, but you believe we got the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck. Is that correct?
I haven't really dug that deep. I haven't looked at every single quarterback that's came out. But
well, you don't have to go past the second in the last 10 years, do you? I mean, Nassib, is he going to really creep up there?
And you know, to try and keep from sounding a homer, I tried to sound kind of neutral there. But no, hey, listen, this is a guy who potentially can turn this franchise around. Now, as people ask me all the time, you know, what do you think Jameis is going to do with the Buccaneers? I don't know what he's going to do with the Buccaneers, but so much of the success of a player, whether it's a quarterback or really any position, has so much to do with the people around him and the scheme and the situation that he's put in. If Lovie Smith tells Dirk Cutter, you know, we're going to be 3 yards in a cloud of dust kind of football team, then no, he's not the right guy. He's not the best quarterback prospect. He's not in the right situation to succeed. But I also believe Lovie Smith has learned, or at least we hope so, that Lovie Smith has learned that this is a quarterback-driven league, and it's very difficult to reach the playoffs unless you have an above-average quarterback. And I believe that Jameis Winston has the capability and talent to become an above-average quarterback. I don't want to use the word elite because that's so subjective, and he hasn't thrown his first pass in minicamp yet. So let's hold that term off. But I certainly believe he has all the tools to be an above-average quarterback. And I believe that Lovie Smith, Dirk Cutter, Jason Light, this coaching staff, the front office, the Glazers, everybody wants to see him succeed and lead this team out of the doldrums that it's been in since its last playoff appearance, back in 2007, whenever it was, a long time ago.
When they led the Giants going into the half before the Giants won the Super Bowl.
I was at that game.
So was I.
My son, my first game I took my son to, yeah.
Wow. All right, so how is the Pewter Report now? So, for those of you who are under a rock, you guys listen to the podcast, you don't know who Mark Cook is. I don't know how that's possible if you're a Bucs fan. Editor-in-chief, is that correct? I always screw your title up because it sounds really important.
Yeah, in-chief. It's not an-chief. If it was an-chief, then we would have to be like, woo, 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 woo.
God damn it. See, there you go, not being politically correct.
Insensitive. I'm kidding. I'm a Seminole fan. I can do that, right?
Yeah, the Seminole tribe gave you guys rights to do it. It's the Redskins
exactly,
that don't have rights.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why they'll all never. No one will be protesting the Seminole mascot because they went about it the right way.
There you go.
They got permission. But anyway.
And they pay them every year.
Well, that helps. I mean, you know, not that they need any more. They took $40 of mine in Hates money a couple weeks ago at the casino, so they're doing okay.
Big spender. That's just what I expected. So with PewterReport.com, however, how are the fans on your board, the largest message board in Bucks universe, how are they falling on this? Because I can't tell right now. You know, there used to be like, you know, Team Claiborne and Team whoever the hell else, and now Claiborne's not getting his option picked up and apparently can't play football anymore. How split do you see the fan base right now on Mariota versus Winston?
Well, before the draft, I would say it was, maybe a 60-40 type deal with Jameis. I mean, that's kind of what our poll was that we had up on the website. I think it finished like 58 to 39, and then there were a few people that wanted to trade down Calico Jack, by the way, or draft a defensive player. But look, since he's the guy, you've seen a lot of the Mariota supporters who are, you know what, they're Buccaneer fans first, and ultimately that's what is important. You know, we've had people say that, we're not going to follow the Buccaneers because Jameis Winston got drafted.
Bullshit.
We had people that said the same thing. If Mariota's the guy, then, you know, I'm going to stop following this team. And there may be a couple people that follow through with that. But the bottom line is whoever the Buccaneers selected, and in my opinion, it needs to be a quarterback, I think the fans should get behind and give this person an opportunity to prove themselves. And I think right now, I would say it's probably 80-20 on our board as far as positive towards Winston versus Mariota, and saw some of the anti-Winston people even in the last couple of days saying, you know what, it's all about the Buccaneers right now, the team, not about one player. So, look, if Jameis stays clean and does the things he's supposed to do and doesn't have any off-the-field hiccups, I think that number grows even more. I didn't hate the Buccaneers when they drafted Warren Sapp, who was a Seminole destroyer for, 3 years in Miami. I didn't refuse to interview Riddell Anthony and Jacquez Green and Ahmad Black and some of these other guys. You know what I mean? Once they leave college, I didn't really care who they played for. So hopefully fans will kind of follow suit on that because it's ultimately about the team, and it doesn't matter what they think. He's here, and he's going to be here for a long time, hopefully.
You know, I know that this is one of those things I think potentially separates this broadcast from some other broadcasts. Everyone's talking about the draft picks. We can talk about their stats. You can talk about what I find to be incredibly trite concept of Jameis Winston's interceptions being an issue and how that translates as a rookie quarterback. And there's been some good articles. In fact, you guys have a great article, I think, Scott's Fab Five from last week, talking about that with the way he'll have to translate to the NFL. But these things have kind of been played out. Everyone kind of gets us. Shit, we've been talking about Jameis Winston for the better part of 3 months, it feels.
Five months. I mean, really going, on Pewter Report, you could see the threads. I actually pulled up a thread where people asked me back in December to give my impressions of the two quarterbacks, Mariota and Jameis Winston, all the way back in December. So now you're talking, nearly 6 months. It's went on way too long.
But that was mostly me, though.
Yeah, Kurt, it was definitely you. Yeah, no question about that.
Now, the question that I want to transition into, though, and then we can go back to the actual ball in the field, because that's what we're supposed to care about, but the NFL has become bigger than that, and it's been bigger than that for a long time, and I think it continues to lapse or journey into this sort of dangerous no man's land. So the only beef that people seem to have against this particular player, and there are other players who fall into this grouping, is that he was accused of something. Now, whether you think that the justice system worked or not is not the issue at bar. He was accused of something. That is all that happened, right? Now, you've got Lyle Collins, who is simply being questioned in conjunction with.
Mm-hmm.
Not even accused, nothing, and he goes undrafted. Right? So we've got this situation where we used to have this thing called a presumption of innocence. And while it's not required, it used to be sort of fundamental as to how we operated. And society has changed significantly, whereby all you need to do is have the specter. Now, I am not weighing in one way or the other, and I know that in the chat room people are saying, oh, it looks like a money grab, and it looks like this. And by the way, I haven't gone to law school. I don't know what the fuck it looks like. I can look at Twitter handles, and I can speculate with the best of them. But what I do know is that he's not in jail, right? He hasn't been found guilty of anything. And the question becomes, when is it enough to ruin someone's career? And I'm not saying that if he did do any of this, that I shouldn't feel horrible, et cetera. That's not what I'm saying. But everyone says, well, what if it was your daughter? And I say, what if it was your fucking son?
Exactly.
You know, people think that I have these blinders on because of my FSU love. Look, I got a sister. I got a mom. I have nieces. I have aunts, grandmothers. There's nothing more despicable other than, fooling around with children than rape, let's just say what the accusation was, rape, sexual assault, whatever it is. Nothing more disgusting than that, other than being called a pedophile. And unfortunately, though, in today's society and the way the news media is, I think being branded is the worst thing a man could be, said about, other than being a pedophile, is being a rapist. I put child, whatever, then you have rape, and then you have, domestic violence, and people can put whatever of those three in what order. But,
sure.
To me, it's sad when, again, a person is been, went through the legal process, which we know is not always correct. We know that. O.J. Simpson, I think we all know that he probably killed Nicole and Ron Brown, all right? But it doesn't always work the way you expect it to. But for better or worse, it's what our society has. Now, Jameis will tell you he's been cleared multiple times, not just one time, but multiple times, and he's very adamant about that. I spoke to his parents on Friday at the introductory press conference when it was over, went over and met Mr. and Mrs. Winston and their daughter and also their son. And what you said about what if it's your son, that's the first thing I thought of when I was talking to him. I mean, imagine if obviously they believe he's innocent, okay? They believe he didn't do it. So put yourself in his shoes if you have a child who is facing national scorn and being accused of something that he's been technically cleared of, not necessarily found innocent of, but certainly not enough evidence to go forward in a trial. How difficult that would be if that were your son. Now, again, that's not to put it, make light of the fact that, what if Erica Kinsman's your daughter? How you feel. Certainly her parents feel that she was violated. But unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, all we can go by is the legal and the judicial system. And he's not in jail right now. And anybody can make any accusation. I could call the Largo Police Department right now and make an accusation about Kurt right now. You know what I mean? Doesn't mean he's whatever I accuse him of. But and would it be fair if for the rest of his life or if he's denied work because I made an accusation? You know what I mean?
Yep.
You've got to let the judicial system work itself out. And right or wrong, most of the time they get it right, not always. But in this situation, obviously Jameis, his family, his attorneys, and the Tallahassee Police Department, the university, and the retired Supreme Court justice all felt that there was not enough evidence to go forward with it. Therefore, in my mind, we have to just assume that he's innocent unless more information comes out.
Now, I think that's an excellent point. I agree with all of your points. I also want to let you know, because you're probably not watching it, the Lightning just scored with 0.8 seconds left. It's actually been changed to 1.1 seconds. Tyler Johnson, who continues the streak of scoring every second game in the playoffs, Lightning take a 3-0 lead in the series.
What station is this on? If somebody could tell me, I have DirecTV, but I think
it's on USA tonight. I think
it is
where it is.
See, there's a problem. Let's get into hockey. The hell with the Buccaneers. Here's a problem with a sport who people don't, the casual fans like myself, cannot find the sport.
Well, the real problem is that casual fans are too stupid to use a guide.
No, I'm looking at the guide. Listen, all season long, I type in 650 on DirecTV, and it's on Sun or it's on Fox Sports Florida. I can figure it out right now. Lightning Live is on. Inside the Lightning was on. I thought the game was over. I Googled it. They showed a 1-0 third period lead. I assumed that was the final. It got over early. I don't know. I'm a casual fan.
Please stop talking like this. People are not going to have faith in your reporting, Mark, if you keep speaking like this.
But I'm not. If this was the Buccaneers, I can assure you I would find the channel. The point is, I'm a casual fan who remembered the game was on an hour ago, and have been watching Inside the Lightning, thinking the game ended early. I mean, the point is it was on NBC, you know, the other night, and before that it was on the Fox Sports, and now you're saying it's on USA. I mean, you know, good Lord.
It was easier for me to find it when I lived in Orlando because it was on Sunshine every single time.
Well, and that's what I assumed. The Rays are always on 653 if you're a DirecTV customer, and normally the Lightning are on 654, but anyway, I don't even know what USA is on DirecTV.
Well,
so
all I know...
I'm glad you told me they're winning. It's 3-0.
It's over. It's over.
Wait, let me ask you this then.
Yeah.
What was the final score?
It was 2-1.
Okay, 2-1.
Yep, 2-1.
So they scored with 0.8 seconds left in the game?
Yep.
In the third period?
Yep.
So no wonder no one's listening to us. They're watching the hockey game.
Dude, everyone's listening to us. We have thousands and thousands of listeners.
I'm glad that this is being recorded because I'm pretty sure live it's you, me, Kurt, and Cheryl.
There's 15 people in here.
Even Hate's not listening right now. He's watching the hockey game.
So let's give them what they want when they download this podcast. And they actually do download the podcast at a pretty decent clip. Tell us about the rest of the draft. What's your biggest surprise elsewhere in the draft? Who are the people? And even go to the undrafted free agents because you're one of like six people who knows who the hell those guys are. Tell us who we should be looking for. What's your biggest sneaky suspicion, that sort of thing. Give us some of the inside media. See, you guys aren't fringe media. You're like real media. So tell us what you're seeing.
Well, you know, I mean, from just the initial perspective, and again, we're just basing it on, you know, being at one Buccaneer place the other day and talking to Jason Light and Lovie Smith about these guys. You know, the good thing is Peter Report does travel. We go to these college all-star games. I'm not going to mention the one because Cheryl will give me a hard time.
God, not about Memphis. Jesus Christ.
Mobile, but anyway,
whatever.
So the point is Ali Marpet, here's a guy, and if you go back and read our practice reports, you know, we had no idea where Hobart College was. We had never heard of Ali Marpet. But you know what? It gave him an opportunity to prove himself, not only to the media, which we don't draft anybody, but to the general managers and the scouts and the coaches that were there. And he was impressive. In fact, the very first day that they were in pads, I think I was covering offensive line that day, and I could probably dig out the practice report. I was like, I have no idea who this guy is, where he's from, or what kind of player he's going to be. But he certainly is not embarrassing himself against some of the top defensive ends in the country. I mean, Nate Orchard was there, the kid out of Washington, Kakaha, I believe. I can't ever pronounce his name right. I mean, there were some decent pass rushers there, Danny Shelton. Some other guys that were, you know, impressive guys, and he didn't back down from any of them. He was impressive, and, you know, a lot of people are saying, wow, D3, D3, and yes, that is somewhat concerning. I mean, here's a guy who's toughest opponent this year, literally were the Merchant Marines football team. So he's got a big difference between, you know, blocking Joe Blow from Merchant Marines and then, you know, maybe blocking Greg Hardy against the Cowboys this year. So it's going to be a transition for him, but, you know, he certainly has the skill set to perform, and he certainly has the confidence. We saw that. Donovan Smith was another guy that we, you know, were kind of impressed at. Had a really good week at the Senior Bowl, a guy that came into it. I mean, in fact, most people at Penn State were like, what in the world is this guy doing declaring early? He's crazy. He needs another year. But again, he turned it on and really made a name for himself up in Mobile and played really well. So there's two guys right there that I think really are going to be – I can't say I think they're going to be. I have no idea. But I know the Buccaneers are hoping that both of those guys are day one starters. And if I had to say one or the other, I would honestly probably go with the Hobart kid, the Marpet kid, honestly, because, number one, there's more of a needed – well, I say there's more of a needed guard than tackle. That's not necessarily true. But there's certainly – we know that there is a needed guard. So so the point is that's a guy that I'm really happy is going to – I shouldn't have turned this hockey game on. Let me pause it so I can pay attention.
Especially since it's over.
It's over, well, and you know the final score.
I don't know that for sure. What if they were reviewing it? We don't know. I'm going on your word. This is the first
and who trusts me? Nobody.
No, of course not. They don't trust my reporting or your recording. So anyway, but those two guys, I mean, look, when you draft a franchise quarterback who the Buccaneers think they did, Jameis Winston, and we know the biggest weakness on this football team that gave up 52 sacks was the offensive line, if they end up somehow managing to get Collins out of this, And you know, what is a weakness, a huge weakness on this team, maybe ends up being a strength. To me, I don't know that I trust my franchise quarterback to a rookie left tackle in Donovan Smith, but that's what the Buccaneers are going to start out doing, and we'll see how it works out. Good news is they do have some insurance there with DeMar Dotson, who was able to play on the left side late last year when Collins was benched. So, you know, worst case scenario, Donovan has to flip to the right and Dotson goes back to the left. But another guy that I really like a lot is the receiver out of Nebraska. Afro Man is his Twitter handle, by the way, the best Twitter handle I've seen in a long time.
It's pretty solid.
You know, he's a guy that needs some development as far as being able to play all three positions at wide receiver because he was primarily an outside deep threat kind of guy. And listen, Nebraska's not known for chunking the ball over the field. No one is confusing what Bo Pelini did with what, you know, Helfrich did at Oregon. They're two completely different offenses. But you can't coach, you know, 4-3, 4-speed, and this guy is a blazer. I like his body type, his build. He's kind of slender. What he is, he's completely different than Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson as far as, I think, what he can do. Now, he's got to be able to develop, you know, I think more of a slot receiver in that realm, and I think he can. He certainly has the talent, but, you know, he's a guy that can certainly stretch the field vertically, too. And I think Dirk Cutter wants to do that. You know, I think he wants to take those deep shots. You take a look at what he was able to do with Julio and Roddy and even Harry Douglas at times. You know, they like to run the football. They run some play action. They like to chunk it deep. And I think they've got three capable guys. I really think the Bell – and I'll tell you what I like about Bell, maybe more so than watching his highlights and looking at his stats, was when we had an opportunity to interview him following the draft. I mean, within a few minutes of him being picked, they always do conference calls with the draft picks for the media inside the media center there. And here's a guy that was just ecstatic about being picked to play. There were other guys we talked to. They're like, you know, they said the cliches, you know, I'm going to come in, I'm going to work hard. This guy is so excited to play football. And from everybody that we've talked to, and we've talked to some people that knew him at Nebraska since then, I mean, this is a guy that's all about football. That's his passion, something that's kind of similar to Jameis Winston, whether you like the guy or think he's a creep or not. No one really questions his passion for the game. He loves playing football, and Bell does the same thing. And I thought it was really impressive listening to him talk. And it's hard for us to write what he said and get the point across because, again, it's you know, you don't get the same perspective. But, I mean, this guy was so happy to be a Buccaneer. He was so happy to be able to take his game to the NFL. And, you know, again, that doesn't mean he's going to be a superstar. It doesn't even mean he's going to make the football team, although I'm sure he will. Bottom line is he has that right attitude, that attitude you'd love to hear if you're a coach or general manager or even a media member who's going to be covering the guy.
You know, it's interesting you made the comment about the slot, and I think when the pick was made, everyone assumed slot because you've got, you know, you've got Vince and you've got Mike.
Right.
Now, when I was discussing with the folks at the bar when the pick was made, I got a friend who's a Nebraska alum, knows about the Bell story. I tweeted out the story about him, you know, getting the job at the bar to pay his electrical bill and all that sort of stuff, good work ethic. You know, his assessment as a huge Nebraska guy was, you know, really good at everything but not great at any one thing. But he's an effort guy who's always going to go give you his all,
right.
And seems to always do well. Plays a lot better than you imagine he could play.
Right.
But what's funny is with his speed and with Vince's age, I almost wonder if we're not going to see, and I think, you know, Justin mentioned this a little bit in his podcast this week, Vincent moving into the slot a little bit and going to a doubles config with ASJ as a split end. Vince as the Z, and then you move Mike to the X and you move Bell to the Y. You've got a pretty formidable lineup with some height and some range and some speed on the hash, and real speed and danger on the edge.
Yeah, and I said that listen, he's going to be hopefully the Buccaneers. I think they're looking at him as Vincent in 2 years. You know what I mean? That outside guy. I mean, that's where he's comfortable playing, and that's what I meant developmental-wise.
Yeah.
You know, I think initially he's, you know, he may give Vincent a blow on the outside or maybe come in, you know, in certain packages and play on the outside. But I think, you know, I think the Buccaneers, I know in times past when P.J. Fleck was here and now the new receivers coach, it flips my mind, you know, they want all of these receivers to know all of the positions, which makes sense, you know what I mean, because there's certain matchups, certain games where you maybe, you know, you want to take advantage of a nickel corner with a 6'5 receiver so you can move Vincent inside and so on and so forth. But he'll be expected to learn all three positions, you know, where he lines up. You know, to me, though, I like Lewis Murphy a lot, you know, but you know, Murphy doesn't have this guy's speed at all, and You know, he's also a pretty good blocker, surprisingly. Again, he had to be at Nebraska because they weren't throwing the ball over the field. They ran the ball a lot with Abdullah. And so, you know, he's pretty physical guy as far as blocking, not bad at that either. And I don't think he's, as your buddy said, that's probably a great assessment. He's not really he's not great or a superstar at anything. But I think part of that may be the fact, again, in the offense that he played in. You know, Nebraska threw the ball. It certainly wasn't the Tom Osborne days of running the option, but it wasn't a wide open spread type offense or I don't think they had a 5,000 yard passer by any stretch this year. So, you know, his opportunities were limited to a degree. And I think, you know, learning under Vincent is huge. And also Mike Evans, who, from what we understand, talking to some people, has really made a jump this year. In fact, I asked Vincent about this last week when we had an opportunity to talk to him. You know, how, and actually I didn't ask him, someone else did. I take that back. And we asked him about the development of Evans. Actually, I did ask him this. You'll go back and watch the press conference because I mentioned what Philip Rivers told me a couple years ago about Vincent. Vincent being such a student of the game that he took notes, meticulous notes, on special teams, even though he was never going to play special teams. I mean, the guy is just that kind of guy. He knows, you know, he could sit in probably any offensive position room and understand what the concepts are of that position outside of wide receiver. And so what I asked Vincent was, you know, is some of that rubbing off on Mike Evans? And he said it definitely is. So here's a guy, Bell, who's going to be able to see Vincent Jackson in action and see a guy, Mike Evans, who I believe is going to take that step as far as being, you know, the meticulous type, you know, do the film work kind of study guy. And so I think he's got a couple really good examples there. And, of course, Lewis Murphy being a veteran, you don't last as long as you have in this league, you know, if you're not a stud receiver by taking shortcuts, you know what I mean? So he's got some great examples, I think, inside that wide receiver room that's going to help him develop.
Should Bucs fans be concerned about Mike Evans having a sophomore slump?
Yes and no. I mean, naturally it's going to happen. I mean, we saw that really late in the season last year where teams kind of figured things out. Now, I'll say this, though. There's a big difference between I'm getting old. The offensive coordinator last year that took over for Ted.
Arroyo,
okay. There's a big difference between Dirk Cutter and Marcus Arroyo, and I don't think Marcus was able to utilize really anybody on offense the way that Dirk Cutter is going to be able to do. And that's not a knock really on Arroyo. You know, I've said it several times. He was thrust into a position he wasn't ready for. There's no way I could take over for Peter King tomorrow, in other words. You understand what I'm saying? And so it would be unfair for people to compare Arroyo to Tedford or Cutter. But the bottom line is there's always that worry of a sophomore slump, but I don't think fans should worry about it from a work ethic or a learning perspective, according to Vincent anyway. We haven't had a chance really to talk to Mike this offseason, but we did Tuesday. I'm seeing how bad I am. But my point is you know, he's gonna take that next step as far as being more of a leader. He talked about that on Tuesday, and he's learned a lot from Vincent Jackson. So, you know, yes, their teams understand there's film on him now. He's not going to surprise anybody. But at the same time, I think Dirk Cutter is going to do a much better job of putting him in a better position to succeed, which may offset that sophomore slump a little bit, if I've made any sense at all. Hopefully you understand what I'm saying.
Well, you rambled a lot.
I hope Kelvin Benjamin has a sophomore slump.
Yeah, Kelvin Benjamin was pretty nasty.
Your
point's a good one, Mark, and I think we were able to pull it together. You can't predict the sophomore slump. It's one of those things where he didn't get dinged up. CJ, Calico Jack in the chat room brought up a good point. You know, Mike came in a little bit out of shape last year, but he played himself into it and then had a great season. Hopefully the rookies this year are going to come in tight. I heard Jason Light on more than one occasion mention, and I'd love to get your feedback on this, that people want to come here. Now, this was one of those things that you always hear as a cautionary tale. If you do X, no one will want to come play. Who wants to come play for the Glaziers? And then if the Glaziers aren't vilified, then who wants to come play for insert coach name here at the time of Shiano? And then who wants to play in Tampa where we can't put more than 25,000 people in a stadium? And Mr. Light seems to think everyone and their brother was going to want to come to play here. Do you feel that tide turning at One Buck Place?
No. I mean, I don't think it's I don't think it's a place that players go to die. You know what I mean?
Jesus Christ. I'm glad. Thanks, Mark.
Well,
your effervescent optimism is catchy. That, you know, maybe that'll be the marketing campaign this year. Come watch the Bucks, a place where players don't go to die.
That's perfect. I think it's still better than a Bucks life, but that's just me. But anyway, my point is, you know, I don't know that guys are jumping up and down, you know, on draft night praying that the Buccaneers take him. However, when you do draft a guy like Jameis Winston, if you're an offensive guy and you're a receiver at some of these other skilled positions, yeah, I could see guys wanting to come play for Tampa Bay a little bit more. But look, 2-14 is 2-14. Until that turns around, I'm not going to say that there's a line at the gate of free agent players or college available draft guys, you know, ready to bust those gates down to get here. I mean, I like the optimism, certainly, and as a general manager, that's what you want. That's what you would expect to hear. But yeah, I mean, I'm not completely buying into that 100% yet.
Well, in the chat room, Walk the Plank TR says players want to win. They won't flock to the Bucks until we become more dominant. I think that's a good point. I think that's a good point, especially for older players who want to try and get that run at a ring. That's why the Patriots have been able to collect really good talent back in the back end of their career, because you know if you go to New England, you have a chance every year,
get
to the playoffs, and then you have a chance to win.
Are you telling me that Jonathan Casillas and Tim Wright were mad they were traded last year? No.
They are probably very upset. And yeah, didn't we trade? There's probably 30 or 40 other ex-Bucks on that team. But the other thing that we should bring up, and we don't mention a lot, or we don't mention it enough, I think, is you know the absence of a state income tax. Great field to play on, which is good for your joints, a great facility.
Unless you're Aaron Rodgers, who thinks this is blames this for his leg injury last year. This guy always trashes Tampa Stadium. But anyway, yeah.
You know, I remember that article coming out, and it's probably my love for the way Aaron Rodgers plays the game that allows me to stop and not think about that. Because I really do love the way he plays the game.
Sure.
But to hear him bitch like a little girl, as I support gender roles, and I'm sure my friend Carrie will yell at me for that one, but really pisses me off. At any rate, we're not going to talk about Deflategate because we don't give any shits about Deflategate or Tom Brady, and I don't think he'll be suspended.
Can I just say one thing about that?
Sure.
I don't care about Tom Brady per se, and I'm certainly not a New England fan, but I don't hate him like a lot of people do. You know, if he did do it and he broke a rule, then he deserves to be punished. But ultimately, you know, I don't think it's that big of a deal, to be honest with you. I mean, I guess the rule is a rule, but, you know, I mean, a half pound here, a half pound there. I just can't believe what's been made of this. And of course, there's such a huge segment of NFL fans out there who love to see Belichick and Brady and those guys squirm. But a lot of that really stems from jealousy, I think. You know, look, if Tom Brady were here and this were happening, Buccaneer fans would be just like New England fans saying it's overrated and it's a bunch of bull crap. But personally, you know, there's been a lot worse things done in the league than deflating, you know, the ball by a half pound or so. But that's all I wanted to say on that. Sorry.
Hey, Mark, what's going on with this Collins? Is there any legs to this story with him? Are the Bucks on his radar? Is he a lock to go to Miami with all those LSU players, or is there still a possibility? What do you think?
Well, I reached out to somebody here before the show, and I haven't heard back. Let me just double-check my phone and make sure I haven't heard back. But, no, the Buccaneers would love to have the guy. We know, and I'll just tell you this, up in Mobile at the Senior Bowl, you know, Collins was there, and we had an opportunity, Scott and I, to spend a little bit of time with Jason Light and even Lovie Smith, you know, kind of off the record. And now that the draft has happened, I'll cheat a little bit and give you some of that. You know, Jason really liked Collins a lot, you know, thought he was a really good player. But certainly when some of the news came out, you know, it was kind of everybody just kind of ducked and pretended he wasn't there. You know, they like Collins, and they certainly would love to have Collins on the football team. And the problem is there's really no competitive advantage at this point. It's not like the Bucks can say we're going to give you $50,000 to sign. You know, it's all kind of capped as far as the rules go with the undrafted. There's a pool of money and things like that. So, you know, it's really going to come down to where he wants to play at if he decides to play this year, which it looks like he will. He'll sign with someone. But I think it's really going to come down to that. And here's the deal. If Jason Light feels that, you know, people want to come here, that this will be something that will kind of answer that question you asked me, Derek. I mean, if Collins ends up coming here, then maybe Jason is right. You know, if Collins decides to go to a team that's more established and you know, more of a perennial playoff contender.
Like the Mighty Dolphins?
Well, I mean, that's
he's got
that's
friends true. There.
Yeah, he's got friends there.
You know how easy it is to make friends when you're a rich football player?
I mean, do you want to play in Kansas City, or do you want to play, you know, down on South Beach? You know what I mean? I mean, it makes sense to me if you're a young college kid coming out of college. You know, where do you want to go? Hopefully, Tampa has enough to entice him, and the opportunity to play, you know, in front of Jameis Winston would be great. But no, there's certainly legs to that. Buccaneers would like to have Collins, but it's really going to depend on where he wants to go, because there's nothing really the Buccaneers can do more so than any other team, to be honest with you, to entice him other than to beg him. And it certainly appears that Jameis has been out recruiting the guy, which I love that too.
Absolutely. Is it kind of a lick and a promise thing? Is, you know, this year we can only give you what we can give you, but next year.
You know, I think, and again, there's people out there that are smarter than me in the reporting world, but I really think he falls under, you know, any other type of rookie where, you know, he's got to play 3 years before you can renegotiate. You know, I mean, Lavonte David earned a new contract after his first season, but the way the rules are set up, I mean, you have to be in the league a certain amount of time before they can renegotiate that deal or cancel that last year and re-sign you to an extension. So I really honestly believe that, and again, somebody will correct me in the chat room, I'm sure, but I believe it's going to fall under that same rule as any other rookie, whether they're undrafted or a free agent or whether they were a drafted player. There's a time frame before they're able to increase that money.
Gotcha. So what's next? What are we looking for this week?
Well, rookie minicamp. I'm really excited to be back out at One Buccaneer Place. You know, this time of year we go for press conferences and for different things. But, you know, it'll be nice to be back at One Buck and to be on the field and actually get to see Jameis in person. We're going to be there both days that it's open to the media. That's Friday and Saturday. I just got the email earlier today. The practices are from 1:30 to 3:30. They're closed to the public. But the media will be allowed to view the first hour of both of those sessions. And then after practice is over, they'll bring us back out on the field. We'll have an opportunity to talk to some of these players. So rookie minicamp's always fun. It's certainly a little bit more exciting when you have the number one draft pick, excuse me, and he's a quarterback. So I'm looking forward to taking a look at him, and see what he looks like, you know, in person, you know, playing on an NFL field. Although, you know, Vincent and Mike and those guys can't participate in it, it still will give us that first glimpse at Jameis Winston. And so we're excited about that. And of course, we'll have full practice reports both days.
What do those practices look like? Are they bullshit drills? Or, I mean, are they legit stuff that you can glean off of? Or
that's something I want to see. And I wonder if maybe the reason they're closing last hour, it seems like we were able to view all of it last year. But it may be they're going to, you know, give us some fluff stuff that first hour, not really show us a lot of the scheme. You know, but I'm curious to see, you know, the personnel, the formations they line up in, you know, and try and see if we can kind of get a glimpse of what Dirk Cutter has in mind. Although I think all we need to really do is go back and look at Atlanta and Jacksonville, and I think he's going to run something similar to that. Although DeMar mentioned yesterday about some up-tempo, no-huddle kind of stuff. So we'll see if they run any of that. There'll be some drills, individual drills, certainly. But there'll be some 7-on-7 and probably some 11-on-11 type stuff as well. Obviously, they're not going to be in pads. It's a no-contact kind of deal. So I just, again, as I get older, I forget what they did last year. I will say rookie minicamp last year was kind of boring because, you know, there was no quarterback to be excited about at that point. There was a bunch of I don't even remember the quarterbacks they had last year at this point, but certainly wasn't anybody of Jameis Winston's caliber at all.
Well, anecdotally, Mark, if I recall last year, you guys did get to stay through the entire session, and that was atypical. But with this year, this feels more like the way. Aren't your weekly practices on that same schedule where you get to see the first hour, and then you come back in for the end?
Yeah, it's actually 30 minutes once the season starts.
So you get to see stretch.
Yeah, basically that. They do a little bit of warm up stuff, but we never see any game planning type things, any install, none of that. We ever get to see during the season. You know, we'll obviously really the first opportunity to see what Dirk Cutter is going to do is going to be August 1st when camp opens, or right around that date. That's when, you know, they can't kick us out because they're going to have fans there for most of those practices. So we'll be.
And if they let us assholes in, then you guys certainly get to be there.
Yeah, wouldn't that be funny if you know, we had to go sit in the stands as fans and what am I saying? I usually go sit in the stands.
You usually do.
You know, we like to, Scott and I, and you know, that's one thing about Peter Report and Scott. He hates, you know, there's a media tent down on the north end corner of the practice field, and And there's not an air conditioner, but a big fan that blows there, and the drinks are all there. And, you know, Scott gets furious if he ever catches any of the Pewter Report people there. He wants us. And you know, Derek, you and I walked it all the way around that place a couple times during training camp last year, going over and watching the defensive linemen and the offensive linemen and those drills. And then they came over and did the one-on-ones on the other side of the field. But, you know, we try and get all the way around. Now, I will say last year during the mini camps, the OTAs, we actually had full field access, not in the middle of the field, but we could go all the way around. Whereas in times past, and most times, it was just we had to hang out on the patio for these things. So
right. It'll
be interesting to see if Lovie opens it up where we can get all the way around like we were able to last year.
Well, I tell you what, I'm looking forward to that coverage. One final question for me, and then, Kurt, if you got another question, I'll fire it over to you. But Jace from GJ Podbash in the chat room wants to know if you have any thoughts about the undrafted free agents, anyone there who looks like it could be a diamond in a rough.
Oh, Scott's going to have something on Friday where he's really going to delve
into those bastard.
Guys. He is the nerd of the undrafted free agents, and I'm not knocking him. I'm glad that he does that. You know, I love the game day type deal. I like to watch the all 22. I like to look at scheme and things like that. And Scott really loves the draft. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I had heard of I think maybe two of the undrafted guys. Certainly the running back out of Louisville,
Ronnell Hall.
Dominique Brown.
Dominique Brown.
No, yeah. I was throwing the second name at you, Ronnell Hall from UCF.
No, I don't remember. I don't remember seeing him a whole lot. But what I'm saying, him and Buckley, one of the defensive ends, the guy from Idaho, is somewhat
quite
familiar
Sean.
With those guys. But the problem, you know, but not the problem, but Scott, you know, really delves into those guys and knows a lot more about those guys. I'm just going to be completely honest with you. I'm not going to try and BS the listeners here and try and act like I know anything about or know a whole lot about some of these guys. But, you know, every year there's a guy that really makes a name for himself. I say every year. But, I mean, remember Leonard Johnson. This was the guy who was basically given a tryout during rookie minicamp. And he's been, you know, your starting nickel cornerback for a while now. So, you know, there is opportunities for some of these guys. And I was watching one of the NFL specials the other day, and not that I forgot, but you kind of were so used to the seven rounds. But when we were kids, Derek, remember there was 12 rounds. You know what I mean?
I do.
And you watch the old Buccaneer games like I do, and there's a lot of, you know, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th round guys who were part of the Buccaneer teams back in the creamsicle days, even some of those good playoff teams. So, you know, the chance of an undrafted free agent making a football team, the 53-man roster, is less than 10%. But, you know, that tells me there's a possibility that one of these guys do and maybe is a contributor this year. We'll just have to wait and see. Again, a fun thing for fans to take a look at and pay attention to our coverage of this because, you know, we're going to certainly point out if some of these guys stand out, we'll make sure to point them out. But Scott on Friday during his Fab Five is really going to delve into the undrafted free agents. I believe, and break them down individually and talk about their strengths and weaknesses.
I'm looking forward to Chris Hackett from TCU beating out Chris Conte right off the bat.
Well, I tell you, poor Chris Conte, that guy, everybody hates Chris Conte. They hated him in Chicago, and Buccaneer fans are all over him here. You know,
they were thanking me at the draft. They were thanking me.
Sure. I'm sure they
I'm
were.
I'm like, I didn't have anything to do with it. Yeah, they, I mean, good gosh.
Now it was, you know, if you notice, Lovie really brought in a lot of guys that were familiar with what they run, and you know, there's something to be said for that because as we saw this defense really struggle earlier in the year, I mean, guys like Levante David and some of the other, you know, Deshaun Golson never really got it. One reason why he's not here. So, you know, I think Lovie kind of realized, you know, if we can find some guys that we still have some talent, but are also familiar with the system. You know, they're not going to be behind the eight ball in a sense. They're going to be out on the forefront a little bit. And whether that means Chris Conte is teaching, you know, Bradley McDougal some of the nuances of it, just because the guy may not be a star player doesn't mean he doesn't understand the system completely and can't be a semi-coach on the field to a degree and certainly in those meeting rooms. So we'll see how Chris does this year. But I've got a lot of higher hopes and expectations. But really, when you look at the way Deshaun played last year, that's not saying a whole lot. And really, safety play in general, I think it was week 17 before McDougal had that pick against Breeze. That may have been the first pick by safety all year, which is really mind-boggling when you think about it.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how Conte plays. If you read Conte's story, and I encourage Bucs fans to go do that, his story is actually a pretty good one. He played very, very injured in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And if you talk to his teammates about the way he played, I think you may get a different feeling about how he plays the game. I think the Bucs fans,
the player certainly, the Chicago Bears player certainly think a lot more of Chris Conte than the Bears fans do, for sure.
Right, right. So I've heard good things about Dominique Brown at the running back position. One final question, and I'll let you go and watch Hee Haw or whatever it is you're planning on doing this evening, Mark. I'm such an asshole.
I'm going to watch Andy Griffith's show, but anyway,
all right.
Send Mark that link to that beard story that was going around this week.
Hey, listen, we both have beards, too.
Not the gross beard story. Is that the gross one you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Essentially, you're supposed to stop wiping your ass with your beard. But if you can wipe your ass with your beard, you probably don't leave the house often.
No, 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 no. Yeah, no, I that's just foolishness. Now, you know, I'll just say this. In all the years I've had a beard, my wife has never contracted E. coli from kissing me. So I find that story to be completely false.
Well, there you go. That is the kind of logic that supports the entire conservative party. Oh, no, shit. Now I'm going to get cast in a Jon Stewart light and
boy.
No one's going to listen anymore. Anyway, so my question for you, as the last question, is defensive end. Obviously, this is a position of need. Adrian Claiborne's now in Atlanta. We got George Johnson from Detroit. We've got a bunch of guys that look like they may be interesting in T.J. Fitinicum and Jacques Smith. That look like they could be the next Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett's begging for a trade. What do you see happen at defensive end, and are we just going to deal with the best we've got or hold out for Jamal Young out of Jones County, Mississippi, J.C., to be the answer on that edge rush?
I think what they have now is what they have, but I think the position that they'll be most scouring that waiver wire for is certainly the defensive end position. And, again, when you're terrible, when you're 2-14, there are some advantages. Getting the number one draft pick helps, but also, you know, having the first claim on the waiver wire through week three of the regular season. And, you know, there are going to be some decently talented guys, and I'll say there's going to be some guys released that are better than what the Bucs currently have on the roster. So, anybody pegging any of these guys other than Gerald McCoy being the starter on the defensive line, may be surprised, because they're going to certainly be out there looking for more talented players. And again, by having the ability to pick up players off of the waiver wire first before anybody else to make that claim, you know, is a nice little advantage to have, because remember, that's where Jacquees Smith came from last year. And there's been other players that have done well in the league that were cut by other guys and teams were able to pick them up. And, you know, maybe they fit that system better. There's going to be some salary cap guys. At some point, the Buccaneers certainly have money, so if there's a higher price, maybe an older veteran guy out there that ends up getting cut, the Buccaneers certainly will take a look at it and bring in some guys. But I would certainly expect, that roster position to greatly change between now and September when Tennessee rolls into town.
You know, it's interesting. Every one of our shows, you hope for that one little nugget that other people aren't paying attention to, that you can say, oh, you know, no one else talks about this or no one else talks about that. And after 10 years, we really don't give a shit about most of that anymore, because the people who listen to us sort of already do. Your waiver wire comment is really, really important, and I want people who listen to the podcast to think about that. Being able that, you know, we come up with all these colloquialisms that are just fucking horrible, like the scrap heap and all this, you know, camp meat and just horrible, horrible things for what human beings do for a living they're better than most humans on the planet at it. But the reality is, you got to go find those diamonds in the rough and get them in camp. We didn't know what we got with Jacques Smith and T.J. Fitinic. I mean, and really, they petered out a bit after a couple of splashes.
Right.
But now we have the entire offseason to work with these guys in the system. You have to have a stable at that defensive line. And a comment in the chat room was, oh, well, George Johnson was a rotational guy with like six sacks. That's no Simeon Rice. Yeah, there's not going to be a lot of Simeon Rices. But I'll take a rotational guy who's good against the run, who can get me six sacks when he does play every day of the week.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason. I mean, the Buccaneers have been looking for Simeon Rice since he left. I mean, they just don't grow on trees out there. And again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, with the quarterback coming into the right system, you know, that's also important for some of these other guys. I mean, sometimes, you know, I mean, Shiano's system was more complicated. You know what I mean? All right, you have this responsibility, then this responsibility. Now you can go get the passer. That's certainly not what Lovie Smith and Joe Cullen preaches on this defense and Leslie Frazier. So, you know, there's going to be some guys that I think are going to fit the system a little bit better. And, again, by having that first waiver claim, you know, chances are there's going to be some guys. I mean, look, not even chances. There will be better players picked up on the waiver claim. There'll be better players when the season starts in the defensive line than there are now. There's no doubt about it. Now, TJ, I hope he works out and does great. Maybe Golson bounces back after what I thought was a really bad year for him last year.
I always forget about Will, and it pisses me off every time you catch me on it. And I appreciate that you catch me on it because you're right. This is a guy that showed all kinds of promise and then disappeared last year. And I'd love nothing more than to see him become the player we thought he could be.
Absolutely. I mean, he's got the physical tools. And now it's from the shoulders up, really, for a lot of these guys. You know, I mean, look, you know, so many of these guys have the physical tools. It's just a matter of you know, what they can do, handling it, processing it during a game. And, you know, Gerald talks about that all the time, Derek. He talks about, you know, and I like to talk to him and ask him, you know, are you as good as you can be? And Warren will tell you right now that, you know, that he's not anywhere close to the potential, and he's been in the league however many years, 6 years now. So, you know what I mean? Because there's just so much to learn and new tricks and but being willing to be open to those things, you know what I mean, is important. And Gerald is, but you know, but Golson, another year in the system, and Golson told me, and I think I mentioned this on the show before, he told me this after his first year, that, you know, he's not the kind of guy that's going to get it sitting in a meeting room. I mean, Joe Cullen can draw up all of these exotic things that he's supposed to do during these meetings, but he needs to do it on the field. He needs the repetition on the field to excel. There's a lot of players like that on both sides of the football, and hopefully it'll click for him, because when you look at the guy, and you talk to the players, they all rave about it. And a lot of these guys are like, God, I wish I was built like him. Gosh, I wish I had his strength. You know what I mean?
Right.
But now it's, you know, now it's from the shoulders up, and that's so crucial. I think Will has the potential to be really good. And to be fair, you know, he was banged up a lot last year, but guess what? This is the NFL. I mean, nobody goes through the season without some nicks and bruises. You've got to be able to play through that and persevere and toughen up a little bit. Not to say Will's not tough, but I think he'll be tougher this year than he was last year, and hopefully he'll be able to excel. But really, his time's running out, though, because, again, you know, you can almost say that he's a bubble guy to a degree. I mean, really, anybody other than...
Almost hell, he is.
Yeah, I mean, he is. And so this is really a huge year for Will Golson. And I know one thing about Will, he's going to work his ass off. You know, I mean, whether it's good enough, we'll see. But he's certainly not going to... he's not taking anything for granted. He's no Daquan Bowers, if you know what I mean. He's willing to put in the work.
Zing! All right. Hey-o, ladies and gentlemen. That's Mark Cook of PewterReport.com. at any rate, Mark, thanks as always for joining the show. We love having you on. We talked to the listeners at the beginning. We're going to try and up our game a little bit this year, do some new shit to piss the mainstream media off, to take our show to a whole nother level, as the youth say. So we will certainly be calling out to you to do those, maybe some roundtables. With this podcast ecosystem that's sort of formulated, I'd love to do some of the roundtables like we used to do back in the good old 10-10 days, where we get together at some local spot. We have like 8 mics going. We get some of you real journalists in with some of us hacks, and we have a good time.
Well, I'm down for it. I appreciate what you do, and this really helps Peter Report. Gives us a forum and gets the word out about what we do. And plus, you know, when I do come to your house to do the show, you and I do a better show out in your driveway. I mean, I don't know that I've ever not left. I mean, it's always 45 minutes or so. Of course, I also feed you a lot more inside scoop that I can't say over the air. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, we do one hell of a show out in your driveway. So I enjoy talking football with you. You know what I mean? You and I are kind of like-minded on a lot of things. And it's really enjoyable talking football, you know, with you and certainly your crew that listens. You got some really informed and smart football people out there. And it's really a pleasure to join you guys when I can.
Well, we'd love to have you. And I will take your compliment on behalf of all of those good listeners. And, Mark, we're going to be eyes peeled towards Scott's new article on these undrafted free agents. We've got the Ryan Dallaire watch on as well.
Yes. Scott likes a lot, by the way. I do know that.
Any guy named Quayshawn, I'm going to pull for just because I want to see that shit on a jersey someday.
I'm just glad they didn't draft that Oregon cornerback that hurt his knee before the Rose Bowl. I was so glad when Daniel Teo Nysom left, because I didn't have to try and spell that name right. So I'm glad that, you know, my whole thing at this point is, you know, as a lazy journalist, is just give me a lot of Smith. So I'm really happy with I think there's 4 Smith players on the roster. I can't screw that up very often.
No, I have every faith you'll screw that up.
Ekpre Olomo. Olomo.
Olomo. I can't pronounce it, and I certainly can't spell it.
All right. Well, thanks again, Mark. We'll be keeping our eyes peeled. And if you have something new, let us know. Tweet at us. We'll be live next Wednesday as well for another show, and I'll let you know what's going on with that. I'll be coming back in from the West Coast. I don't know if that's going to be the one where we do some new shit, but I think it may be the week after where we try and get together somewhere live.
Well, let me know, man. I'll be happy to join you guys as long as it's not, you know, in Tifton, Georgia or somewhere. If it's local, I should be able to make it.
It might actually be in Mobile, Alabama. No, it's not.
Yeah. That's a good grub in Mobile, Cheryl, if you're listening. Excellent food in Mobile, Alabama.
All right, brother. Take care, Mark.
Enjoy the penny slots.
Oh, God. Don't even get me started.
He lost a whole $40, brother.
Wait, I got to just mention this. So I'm hanging out with Hayden at the casino, right? And he plays the, and he's probably going to be mad that I'm giving up his stuff. But what's like the most hardest thing to win in a casino? I mean, I'm not a big gambler, but I would
assume the car,
the
wheel or roulette,
the ball, the thing the ball spins around in. What's that called?
Roulette.
Yes. Okay. I mean, what are the odds? This guy. I mean, you know, he made a car payment. You know, unfortunately, his car payment, not mine. I mean, the guy's a genius. So I sit down right beside him and I try and do exactly what he's doing. And my $40 were gone very quick. I don't understand the slot machines. You have to have a PhD in rocket science to understand them these days. There's no more just pull the lever and hope you get the three bars. But but roulette, I mean, here, wait, real quick, and you can cut this out of the podcast. But,
I'm not going to do that. I don't edit shit.
But I mean, so I had $10.42 left, right?
Big money.
So, I'm big money in it, right? I've lost a bunch of it on slots. I'm like, well.
He lost that whole $4.58.
You know, I started with 40, and I was down to 10:48, so or 10:42. So I'm like, well, you know what? I'm gonna go sit back down with Hayden and see what we can see if I can, you know, some of his luck rubs off. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I can bet on red and black, right? And he goes, yeah, you just, you know, punch if you want red or black, $5 bet minimum, no problem. And it's 50-50. It's 50-50.
No, it's not.
One out of two times you got to win, right?
No.
So I bet red. It comes up black. Well, it's got to be red the next time, right? Because it's 50-50. So my last $5 I put on red again, and guess what? It comes up on black. Ding, ding, ding for Skip. Boo-hoo for me. So I actually went to the window and cashed out and got my 42 cents. The lady thought I was crazy, but I was like, I'm not donating this to you guys. That's the last 42 cents I got right now. So anyway, that's...
He went across the street to that shitty gas station and put that in his car and drove home.
Yes, exactly. Actually, I paid for 42 cents and pumped 10 and took off real fast, like my old high school days.
Hey, listen, be careful. That stuff could come back to get you.
Yeah, I'd never actually really did
there
that
could be actually. Allegations, Mark, and that's all we need nowadays.
Exactly. Mark, the gas thief.
Do you see how we brought that full
so
circle?
I should probably not Instagram a picture of me in front of a gas handle saying, ha ha. You know, shout out to Circle K then, right?
You probably should not. That's absolutely
okay, I won't
correct.
Do that.
So first of all, your mathematics skills explain why you're in journalism. Mm-hmm. And
wait, why? What do you mean? What did I mess up on?
It's not 50-50 on roulette because there are non-black and red items. So it's not
really?
50.
See,
yeah.
Hey, didn't tell me that. I had no idea. I assumed it was either red or black.
Additionally, 50-50 never implies on two distinct, even if it was 50-50, a coin flip. It's still 50-50 the second time. You're not guaranteed. There's no implication of the second. It's like the Monty Hall thing. If you're given three doors and you have to pick one, right,
uh-huh.
And you pick door one, and then I tell you it's not door three, pick again. Should you stick with one or should you pick the other choice?
That's why I'm not. God didn't make me to be a gambler. I'm just a world's worst gambler.
Kenny Rogers is crying somewhere right now.
Exactly.
All right, man. All right, Mark. Take care. Don't steal any gas. We will see you next Wednesday, and we'll look for great things from you on social media and from Scott Reynolds and the whole crew over there at Peter Report.
All right, man. You guys take care. Thanks for having me. See you, Kurt.
Bye. Take care, brother.
Bye.
All right. Look at that. We get to rate Skype while we're doing the show. Look at that. Skype, you did a pretty good job. I'm going to rate you as very good, and I'm going to remove this sons of bitches. Remove from the group, and we're going to go back to Kurt full screen to wrap up the show. Hopefully you guys... Not you full screen entirely. I mean, you instead of... God damn it, Kurt.
Jackie's ass back up there full screen. Don't put me up there.
That's
full
a good
screen.
Point. Jackie's ass should be involved in here. I need a three-way. Oh, no.
Oh, damn it.
There he goes again. Here, I'm going to get that thought out of everyone's mind. We'll just have Jackie's ass up there as we wrap this show up. That'll make everyone happy. And if you want to see Jackie and her ass, you can go to Ferg's Live, though they're not a sponsor, so it's the last time you'll ever hear me say their name, unless they become a sponsor. Though right now here in the offseason, we have no official sponsors. Our sponsorship packages will be coming out over the next 4 weeks, and we hope to have Winghouse back and Elder Ford and all of our great folks back to allow us to up our game to a whole nother level. So I've enjoyed having Kurt on the show. I've enjoyed you guys in the chat room. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed the podcast. We will be talking more about the in-depth review of these draftees and the team. And as we have reports come out of guys like Mark and Scott from the mini camp, we'll get more of a feel for what's going on. I think my guns are trained on training camp. You guys know how geeky I get about training camp. I, of course, will miss a portion of it again because of the Hall of Fame. So we'll need the eyes and ears of all you local folks like Kurt and Calico Jack and Captain Reno and all you guys to get out there and get the great coverage that we always do because, you know, we all look for different stuff, and I think it's really important to get those things done. So
you missed some news. Reno isn't local anymore.
Oh, that's right. Reno moved to Tallahassee. Shit, I forgot all about that. Well, hopefully Tallahassee's treating you well. I think I see Patches in the chat room, too. He wasn't here when we wished him a happy one-year anniversary. So, Patches, happy one-year anniversary. Thank you for all of the articles you do and for your acceptance of an increased role this year here at What the Buck. So we're looking forward to get all the free shit we can get out of you before you eventually leave frustrated and you feel used because that's normally our pattern. So, Kurt, you got anything to say goodbye to these folks with, or are we just going to sign off?
No, I think you just sign off. I'm tired.
All right, Kurt's tired. I'm tired. We have no bumpers, but Kareem is going to work on some new bumpers for us. God bless his screenshot, says Buck for Life. I figured we could end on a high note, and Jackie certainly is that. So we will see you guys next Wednesday. We are scheduling a show. We'll put that up, and we'll continue to interact with you guys via social media. So download the podcast, spread the word, bring more people next week. And until next week, this is Old School, and for Kurt, we are out of here. Normally there's music playing, which covers up me clicking on shit.